అమూని పంచస్థానాని హి అధర్మ ప్రభవ కలి ఔత్తరేయేన దత్తాని న్యవసత్తన్నిదేశకృత్. అమూని పంచస్థానాని హి అధర్మ ప్రభవ కలి ఔత్తరేయేన దత్తాని న్యవసత్తన్నిదేశకృత్. అమూని పంచస్థానాని హి అధర్మ ప్రభవ కలి ఔత్తరేయేన దత్తాని న్యవసత్తన్నిదేశకృత్. Amoni, all those, Pancha, five, Sthanani, places, He, certainly, Adharma, irreligious principles, Prabhava, encouraging, Kali, the age of Kali, Autareyena, by the son of Uttara, దత్తాని డెలివర్డ్, న్యవసత్ డ్వెల్ట్, తత్ బై హిమ్, నిదేశకృత్ డైరెక్టెడ్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్: దస్ ద పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ కలి బై ద డైరెక్షన్స్ ఆఫ్ మహారాజ్ పరీక్షిత్ ద సన్ ఆఫ్ ఉత్తర వాస్ అలౌడ్ టు లివ్ ఇన్ దోస్ ఫైవ్ ప్లేసెస్. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the age of Kali began with gold standardization, and therefore, falsity, intoxication, animal slaughter, and prostitution are rampant all over the world. And the saner section is eager to drive out corruption. The counteracting process is suggested above. And everyone can take advantage of this suggestion. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru శ్రీయుతః పదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగరజాతాం సహగణా రఘునాథాం వితంతం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాన్ సహగణాలలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు
दीनबंधु जगत्पते पेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा I'd like to welcome all of you all to today's Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are in the first canto of Bhagavatam, a particular section where Parikshit Maharaj is dealing with Kali personified. In one sense, all of us are also in a very similar situation to Parikshit Maharaj. The only difference between what Parikshit could do and what we are able to do is Parikshit put Kali in a box. We have to hide in a box now, you know, to be saved from Kali's influence. That's the only difference now. Parikshit had the ability to really put Kali in one small box, but Kali's box has expanded so widely now that all of us have to hide in one small boxes, you know. Our temples are almost like small boxes in which we can hide and we can feel protected and safe from the influence of Kali. But it's so very difficult, so very complicated and so very intense, the situation in which all of us are in Kali Yuga. So it's, Parikshit Maharaj gave a very small space to Kali and Kali has expanded and occupied so much of our lives. That's exactly how Maya works into all our lives. She only occupies a small space and then she expands. The Krishna's energies, they are very expansive in nature, whether it is material energy or spiritual energy. So it depends on us which energy we want to expand. So if you want to expand material energy, the material energy expands so widely it will occupy all of our lives. And if you want to expand the spiritual energy of Krishna, even that can occupy all our lives, literally. Just 2 days back, I was talking about the concept of Atmanivedanam. So the idea of Atmanivedanam means we surrender our existence to the Lord, right? When you come into the Hare Krishna movement, when we come in, we almost seem to be coming in with a very small 1 foot into the movement, right? So if you all remember your first days in the Hare Krishna movement, somebody would have told you, just chant one round, everything will be nice, you know. And we take that very innocently and we chant one round, you know. And then they, after a few days, they'll tell you, you are still at one round, why don't you chant 2 rounds, you know. And then we innocently start chanting 2 rounds, you know. And then slowly, slowly, they say every Ekadasi, why don't you chant 1 more round, you know. In a matter of few days, you're chanting 16 rounds, 2 hours of your life is gone. And then they say that, why don't you just add, you know, some deity worship into your life. You know, a little bit of offering food to Krishna. So all your food habits are taken over by the Hare Krishna movement. And then they say, why don't you read Prabhupada's books? Suddenly all your reading habits are taken over by the Hare Krishna movement. And then they tell you, why don't you just stop watching television, all the movies and all that. And why don't you watch some spiritual lectures, you know. And suddenly all your YouTube, all the scroll that you see is filled with Hare Krishna devotees only, you know. And then slowly, slowly, you know, your contact data is filled with Hare Krishna devotees. And then literally every space of your life is occupied by Krishna. That's how Krishna's energy expands. And then finally, the last nail is when they say, why didn't you take milk from our temple, you know? And then the Haribol milk comes into your house. So literally every aspect of your life is taken over. And that's how Krishna expands. So when we say we should do Atmanivedanam, this is what it means. Give your entire self to Krishna. So this is how Prabhupada has designed our movement in such a way that literally every little corner of your life
is influenced by spiritual energies. Literally every habit that we have, our bathing habits, our eating habits, our dressing habits, literally every aspect. So that's how spiritual energy expands. And then I don't have to give you all an idea of how material energy expands. We all very well know that, and literally how every corner of our material of our life can get occupied. So today I'm going to be discussing some very interesting thoughts on how we can get gold standards. So Prabhupada is talking about gold standards here, but this what Prabhupada is talking about is more or less gold standards in terms of Kali Yuga's gold standards. We're not going to get into that. We're going to talk about how our spiritual life, we can enhance it and bring it to a gold standard. I'm going to share with you all some really nice, very interesting thoughts that will help you in your journey of spiritual life, and it'll help you in absorbing the mood of Krishna consciousness and the gold standard that we really need to reach at some point. Since we're talking about gold, let me begin with the story of gold. There was once a man who was very, very poor and didn't have any money. He met a great saintly person who gave him a touchstone. And he told him, I'm lending you this touchstone for 3 months. This touchstone, you touch iron, it will turn into gold. So then I'll take it back from you after 3 months. So this Mahatma, this great person gave this man the touchstone and went away. This guy, he went to buy iron from the shop because he didn't have any iron at home. So he found that iron bar is very expensive. He didn't have enough money. He thought, if I buy an iron bar, all whatever little saving I have will go. I'll wait a little bit for iron price to come down. He waited for after 1 month. He went and saw what is iron price. It didn't come down much. So he said, I'll wait for one more month. Like this, he waited for 3 months. And then iron price didn't come down much. He didn't end up buying the iron. The Mahatma came back and he said, give me back the touchstone. He took it back away. This fellow had the touchstone in his life, but he didn't want to take the risk of buying that iron piece. A lot of us, we are like this man who have a touchstone, but somehow we don't know how to use it properly. We don't work hard enough to make that touchstone turn every aspect of our life into gold. So spiritually, all of us want to practice what is known as bhakti, and we want to experience a higher taste in bhakti, but somehow we are not exactly experiencing the higher taste. So there are two types of rasa. There is vishaya rasa and there is bhakti rasa. So how much ever you attain vishaya rasa, it is never satisfying. Whichever phone you buy, somehow the mind tells you, not good. Get a better one, You buy an iPhone 14, iPhone 15 is going to come very soon, That will become dissatisfying. So literally, whatever you buy, whatever car you buy, eventually it becomes dissatisfying. Whatever clothes you buy, eventually it becomes dissatisfying. Whatever house you buy, eventually it becomes dissatisfying. That is how vishaya rasa is. It never allows you to be satisfied. So vishaya rasa has no ability to satisfy. But there is something known as Brahman rasa, which is very satisfying. But there is something higher known as bhakti rasa, which is simultaneously dissatisfying and satisfying. Now you might wonder, how can something be satisfying and dissatisfying simultaneously? That's the nature of bhakti. So when vishaya rasa, it causes dissatisfaction now and dissatisfaction later. Brahman rasa causes satisfaction in long term. And bhakti rasa, it has a dual effect. It not only causes satisfaction, but it also simultaneously causes dissatisfaction. So if you study any of our acharyas, you will never find even a single acharya saying, I am satisfied in bhakti. They always say, where is Krishna? They always say, Krishna is missing in my life. They have so much Krishna in their life, still they feel Krishna is missing. And interestingly, when we come into the Hare Krishna movement, in a few days we feel very satisfied, thinking that we have attained Krishna. That's the biggest illusion that we can be in. So, the nature of Bhakti Ras is it causes long-term satisfaction and it causes long-term dissatisfaction. Like say, for example, when you drink water, when you're very thirsty, what do you do? Drink water, isn't it? One glass of water can quench your thirst. You're happy. You ask a fish, how much water can quench its thirst? The fish needs water constantly. And how much ever water you give the fish, it is still not satisfied. That's how nature of bhakti is. When you connect with the process of bhakti very, very powerfully and it becomes an innate part of you, how much ever you get, it feels less. Today, if we chant 16 rounds, it feels so much. And we feel like hanging that bead bag as soon as possible, you know. We are looking at that hook when I'm going to hang the bead bag. Isn't it? So that means we are not experiencing great dissatisfaction that why am I chanting less? I want to chant more and more and more. So when you practice bhakti, so the proof that you're practicing devotional life nicely, one day you will feel I've not chanted enough. Today we're feeling I've chanted more than enough. So that means we have not yet got there, you know. So the nature of bhakti is it will give you long-term satisfaction and long-term dissatisfaction. You feel good, but you feel I need more. That's the dual effect. If you study any of our scriptures, if you study any of the great exalted souls in any of our scriptures, like for example, if you study Mother Sita, her eyes were like a fish, constantly looking for Lord Ram. And the more she sees Ram, the more she feels like seeing Ram. Isn't it very interesting? Yeah. It's a very interesting equation, right? Lord Ram went to Shabari to eat fruits. He was feeling very hungry. But when he was eating Shabari's fruit, the more he ate, the more hungry he felt. And he kept eating more and more and more. You think Ram was really hungry? That was not his problem. He is Atma Ram. He is self-satisfied. But his hunger is triggered by the love of Shabari. So when the Lord sees someone so much loving with him, he feels more and more hungry. Whenever you practice devotion, there are 5 steps in the path of devotion, which are the beginning steps in your path of devotion. The first step in the path of devotion is associating with saints. The interesting thing about these 5 steps is that each step, we know all these 5 steps and we probably do all these 5 steps also, but we do them in the wrong way. Because we do these 5 steps in the wrong way, these 5 steps don't have the desired effect that they're supposed to cause in our hearts. And then they don't have the desired power to transform and to cause us great dissatisfaction and satisfaction simultaneously. So what are the 5 steps? The first step, as I said, is associating with devotees. So many people go to associate with devotees. In the beginning, we associate very happily. We associate very enthusiastically. After some time, problems begin. We start evaluating our association in terms of quality. So we start rating saints. We start evaluating every saint and rate them. This is not what association is. That means we go and see, you know, hear one saint and we say, this is a very good saint, very good speaker. I'll hear him. And then you hear another speaker and he said, no, this is not so good speaker. I'll not hear him so much. We start rating saintly people. So we go to association for what? We go to association to get enriched, to feel satisfied, to feel nourished. And in that same association, what are we doing? We're ending up evaluating. And when we end up evaluating, we don't understand what satsang really means. So the idea of Bhagavad Katha is that you hear from those saints who hide themselves and bring Krishna into our lives. There might be some saints who hide Krishna and bring themselves into our lives. You'll find, you know, across the world, if you go around and hear so many, look at posters of Bhagavad Gathas around the world. You'll find the photo of the saint so huge, and somewhere in one corner, Krishna's photo. So they are, you can see the saint very powerfully, but they're hiding Krishna behind them. Ideally, we should associate with those saints who hide them behind the Lord and project the Lord ahead. That's the quality of association that we seek. And then when we get that quality of association, don't do evaluation. Just go and absorb yourself in hearing and associating with these saintly people. The second step in practicing bhakti is everyone who goes to satsang, how many people are actually interested in satsang? The second step is interest. One is, first step is going to satsang, associating with saints. And the second step is associating with saints, that means hearing Harikatha, hearing Bhagavad Katha, with great interest and eagerness. Really, the transformation happens when there is eagerness in the heart, when there is real interest in the heart. Many of us who are here in the Hare Krishna movement today, we may not have come to the Hare Krishna movement out of interest. We may have been dragged into the Hare Krishna movement. Somebody pushed us, somebody dragged us, somebody got us, you know. But just because somebody pushed us and dragged us and got us and forced us, doesn't mean we can sustain in the moment. Somebody can force you to come and sit there. But eventually, you only have to hear. You only have to develop the interest to hear and absorb with eagerness. That is something that you have to develop yourself. The third step in bhakti is serving the lotus feet of a guru. So can anyone serve a guru? Even to serve a guru, there is one very important qualification that we sometimes miss. The qualification to serve a guru very well is this one thought, that I am not qualified to serve the guru. But the guru is so merciful that he allows me to serve him. That's the thought. But unfortunately, what thought do we carry? We carry the thought of pride. That, see how great I am serving my guru. So if you carry that pride in your heart, say, thinking that I am so good, therefore I am getting to serve the guru, that's the unfortunate part. That's the very unfortunate part. You're getting to do the highest service, but you're doing it with the wrong spirit, with the wrong mood, with the wrong consciousness. So service which is done without pride helps us advance. But service that is done with pride, it actually takes us, you know, lower in our consciousness and mood. The fourth step in progressing in bhakti is singing the glories of the Lord, singing the greatness of the Lord. But when we sing the greatness of the Lord, how do we sing it? That is important. A lot of times we sing with the mood to show everyone, look at my voice. Please hear my voice. So actually we are singing the holy name, but internally we are telling everyone, look at me, I am singing, hear my voice, it is so melodious. So the question is, when somebody hears you sing, what do you want them to focus on? Do you want them to focus on your voice, or do you want them to focus on the devotion towards the holy name? So the more we are singing with the wrong mood and the wrong consciousness, to that extent, that singing is not exactly going to be pleasing to the Lord. It's not exactly going to be the most pleasing to the exalted Vaishnavas. And therefore, if you're singing about the Lord's kindness, you should actually feel that that I am so unqualified, but I'm getting this opportunity to sing for the Lord's pleasure. And these four steps are the primary steps towards your progress in your spiritual life. But the fifth step is a very internal step. The fifth step is doing these four with great determination and with intense faith. Each of these steps when they're done with great determination and great faith, they really bring out the best in us. Spiritually, as we all have heard in us from our younger days in spirituality, that spirituality is like walking on a razor's edge. So you might be practicing spiritual life, but if you're not practicing it in the right mood and the right consciousness, that very spiritual practice that you're doing might become opposite, might have the opposite effect on you, might actually become detrimental for your spiritual progress. And therefore, the consciousness and the mood with which you practice our spiritual life is very, very important. So there are people who are very close to God, but even they can be struggling in their spiritual lives. Even they can be struggling in their journeys of life. And therefore, when we look at anyone's spiritual practice, we should understand that a lot of us, almost every single Vaishnav, every single devotee that we know, is also a struggling devotee. Is also a struggling sadhaka. So while we all have good things in us, we all are also storehouses of bad things. Remember, we are all Kali Yuga products. When we are Kali Yuga products, anyone who is a product of Kali Yuga, you can't exactly be proud of yourself. The very fact that you're born in this age, this is like the, like Shamanandu says, this is the lowest part of a garbage dump. The garbage dump is anyway bad. So the material world is like a garbage dump. And in the garbage dump, the lowest part of the garbage dump is the worst. It's like the most stinking part, most dirtiest part, and the most yucky part, you know. So those who are in other yugas are like the upper part of the garbage dump. You know, like, relatively fresh. Those who are in Kali Yuga are the lowest part of the garbage dump. Absolutely rotten. So now, when such people who are the lowest part of the garbage dump come into the path of Krishna consciousness, suddenly we start feeling that maybe I am qualified like the ones that are on the upper part of the garbage dump. Right? Not exactly. We are in the highest process, but that doesn't make us the highest. Unfortunately, when we think that we are the highest, just because we are in the highest process, that leads us to some wrong diseases, wrong notions. And therefore, there are two types of mindsets or two types of people who are in this world. The first type of people are called, I'm talking about specifically Kali Yuga products, you know, all of us. The first type of people are called as Rakshasas or demoniac people. And the second type of people are called as Rogis or patients. There is no third type in Kali Yuga. Everybody else is, whoever is not in these two categories, they are out of the material world, you know. They are Siddhas, they are Nitya Siddhas, they are, you know, perfected beings basically. But in this world, you will find these two types of people. Either they are demons or they are patients. So, when we come to the path of Krishna consciousness, we have to simply understand the difference between these two. Demons are those who not only enjoy their bad acts, but they are proud of their bad acts. They're enthusiastic about their sin, basically. So they have no embarrassment or shame about it, you know, and they boast about it, in fact. And such people, they eventually need discipline, punishment, and rectification. And there are other people who are not so bad. They're not demons exactly. But somehow or the other, they end up in the wrong path. And somehow or the other, they end up in the wrong direction. And therefore, these are people who don't want to commit wrong, but they end up committing wrong. Simply because they are part of this world. And these are patients who need a lot of sympathy from us. They need compassion. They need treatment. And so here, there is no confusion between right and wrong. They know they are wrong. But they just feel helpless in doing it. Like if you talk to someone who is addicted to smoking. Lot of them know it is wrong. But they just don't know how to get out of it.
It's not that they feel it's right. I don't think there's anyone in this world who does some sin and feels it is right. They just do it because, but they're helplessly dragged into doing it, basically. And therefore, those who are in this category of help weak people, they need compassion. Like, for example, in the Ramayana, we find Vishwamitra telling Ram to show mercy to Ahalya and to punish Tataka. Vishwamitra didn't tell Ram blindly, anyone who does wrong, kill all of them. No. Vishwamitra told him, show compassion to Ahalya. Because she made a mistake in a moment of weakness. And Tataka did planned killing. She would kill people with a plan. There's a big difference between doing something wrong out of weakness and doing something wrong out of, planning, basically. And therefore, Ahalya was a sick patient who needs Ram's compassion and treatment. So, usually, people with a low immunity, those who have low immunity, they are more susceptible to disease, isn't it? So, similarly, a person with existing anarthas is more susceptible to the effect of Maya. So, if you find someone who is devotee but doing something wrong, don't get angry on them, but become compassionate towards them. You are in an environment, they are in an environment where there is so much of intense pressure. Now imagine if you also get upset at them and they are already struggling, where will they go? What is the hope for them? And therefore such people need compassion. And therefore the idea of spirituality is the idea of finding the difference between demons and patients. If you find a demon, stay away. If you find a patient, give them love and affection. Show them compassion. Help them overcome their struggles. Even if they sometimes slip and make mistakes, don't give up on them. Help them stand up again. And that's what the preaching movement is about. The preaching movement, the Hare Krishna movement, is not meant to keep pointing out to people's faults. Unfortunately, a lot of devotees become experts in finding faults in others. And we wait for them to make a mistake and say, see, you did this wrong. Come on. Catch them doing it right. Help them grow out of it. I have, in my travel around the world, whenever I travel to some Hare Krishna temples, I find so many times new people coming in. And they are offering obeisances in the wrong way. And somebody is waiting for such an opportunity. Pounds on them and say, you don't know this. Such a stupid fellow. You don't know the basic. Hey, Baba, at least he's offering obeisances. At least he has the ability to bend his head on the floor. Most people don't even have that ability. You just have to turn it around, right? He's bending his head in the wrong direction. You have to just turn around the direction, that's all. At least he's bending the head. So, that kind of compassion towards people who are patients, who are struggling, is what is really needed for our movement to grow to the next level. We find in the Ramayana, there was two brothers, Vali and Sugriv. Vali was very brave and very powerful. Sugriv was very fearful. At any sign of trouble, Sugriv would run. He would run from his home. He ran from the world. He traveled around the whole world, running away from Vali. And he would keep running. He ran to the Rishimukha mountains. Practically, he kept running, 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 running. And finally, he ran to Ram. Vali, on the other hand, should have been Ram's ideal choice. Because Vali already had defeated Ravan before. But why did Ram choose Sugriv and not Vali? There's a very interesting reason, which talks about these two mindsets that we're talking about, right? So, Sita represents Bhakti Devi. To attain bhakti, we must have certain fear in our hearts. There has to be an element of fear in your heart. Spiritual life, for anyone who is practicing spirituality, little bit of fear is important. But, so basically, that fear element was missing in Vali. He had no fear only. He had no fear about anybody. I mean, imagine the old world was fearing Ravan, and Vali had no fear of Ravan. Absolutely no fear of Ravan. So if fearlessness and good qualities take us away from God and make us proud, and those qualities become the obstacle for us not to attain bhakti. Fearlessness is supposed to be a good quality, isn't it? Abhay, it's a good quality. But that very fearlessness, if it takes us away from God, it becomes a bad quality. So any good quality that takes us away from God is a bad quality. So here, of course, does it mean that we should be so fearful and cry all the time? Fear is good if it takes you to a doctor. Fear is good if it takes you towards the right direction. Fear is good if it is taking you towards God. Running to God is worth the fear. But if fear takes you away from God, then that's not good, basically. So here we find that when we go to a doctor for a treatment, first thing we need to do when we go to a doctor for treatment is admit that we are sick. Imagine a patient goes to a doctor and does not want to admit I am sick. What can the doctor do? The doctor asks the patient, what did you eat wrong yesterday? He said, no, I ate all healthy food. What the doctor will help you? The first thing you tell the doctor all the things that you have done wrong. Admit all your mistakes. Then the doctor can help you, isn't it? So that ability to admit that you have made mistakes, the ability to admit that I have anarthas is the first qualification of Sugriva. Is the first qualification of someone who is a patient. So if you claim yourself to be a patient and not a demon, the first ability is that I made a mistake. Say it. I have anarthas. Say it. Admit it. The moment you admit it, you get admission in the school of bhakti, basically. When you say, I have not made any mistake. I don't have any anarthas. I don't have any shortcomings. That means you fall in the category of demons. No hope. No one can help you. And therefore, here we find that the Lord, He really just waits simply for you to have the ability to admit you made a mistake. And you know who helps you admit that you made a mistake? Again, it goes back to the station of devotees. If you do not have a devotee in your life, you will not have the ability to even admit your mistakes. The only difference between Vali and Sugriv is Hanumanji stood next to Sugriv. And Sugriv's association with a devotee actually helped him learn the process of admitting one's mistakes and seeking help, seeking shelter of the Lord. Unfortunately, if you have the wrong kind of association, you end up with the wrong kind of mentality. There was once a man who was very fed up of his house. His wife was always pushing him to go and earn money and always... He was a very poor man and his wife was really, really intense. So he decided, I don't want to live anymore here. I'm going to the forest. I'll commit, end my life. He went to the forest to end his life. And in the forest, he saw a lion. And this lion was coming to jump on him and eat him up. Just when the lion was about to pounce on him and eat him up, one very beautiful swan spoke to the lion and told the lion, oh, king of the jungle, do you know what you are doing? The lion just stopped a little bit. He said, I am going to eat my breakfast. The swan said, no, this is not an ordinary human being. It's a Brahman. It's a Brahman Devata. You should worship him. You should serve him. If you please him, then you will get rid of your animal form and you will get a higher form. Listening to the advice of the swan, the lion's heart, melted a little bit. The swan said, you will get food anywhere. There's so many animals are there in the jungle. But this person you should not harm. So the lion listened to the advice of the swan, went and actually, the lion had hidden some diamonds somewhere. He went and got some diamonds and gave it to this man. And this man became very, very happy. He blessed the lion, went back home. He took those diamonds, they sold it and they made money. And the family had a very nice time at home. Obviously, he's a Brahmana. He has no idea about investments and he has no friends in the financial world. Eventually, he became poor again. And again his wife started troubling him like anything. This fellow said, I'll go and end my life again, you know. And this time the wife told him, go to the jungle, meet the lion, you know. So the Brahmana was not sure what exactly is going to happen. So anyway, he went to the jungle, met the lion. And the lion again was so happy. He said, I was waiting for you. I have stored more diamonds for you. And this time, the environment of the jungle had changed a little bit. And here, there was no swan at this time. There was one crow. And this crow talked to the lion and told the lion, what are you doing? Are you gone mad? You going to give him diamonds and worship him? You're a king of the jungle. Come on. You can't act like this. You should eat him up. And I heard the Brahmin's flesh is the tastiest because they eat such nice things. Please eat him up, you know. The lion now listened to the crow and jumped on him and ate him up. Lion was innocent guy. The association with which he was, that changed him, made him do different things, basically. So a lot of us are like that lion. We may be powerful individually, but weak mentally. And therefore the association with which we, the kind of people that we surround ourselves with, determines our actions, determines the decisions that we make in our lives. And therefore we should choose whom we are associating with very carefully. And the kind of mood and the consciousness with which we worship should actually help us take shelter of the Lord. So there are four very important limbs of the process of bhakti. Jnana, karma, bhakti and sharanagati. These four are very important aspects of the process of surrendering our hearts. So if you have the capacity to think, then jnana helps you. If you don't have the capacity to think, but if you have the capacity to work, then karma helps you. But if you don't have the capacity to work also, and if you don't have the capacity to think also, but if you have a lot of emotions in the heart, then bhakti helps you. But if you don't have all the three, then sharanagati helps you. Sharanagati means taking shelter. So if you don't have intelligence, if you don't have emotions, and if you don't have ability to do anything, what you can do? Take shelter of the Lord. And when you take shelter of the Lord, the great devotees understand that taking shelter of the Lord is the highest process in our spiritual lives. And therefore the great devotees of the Lord know very well that it is important to take shelter. But the devotees know one more secret, which normally people don't know. The one additional secret that the devotees know is something that is very amazing. It's one level higher than Sharanagati to the Lord also. I'll explain what that secret is through a very interesting story. There was a great saint named Parashar Bhatta. So Parashar Bhatta, he always went to the temple of Ranganath and took darshan of Ranganath. He went to the temple of Ranganath, but he never took darshan of Ranganath. He did something very interesting. There is a temple of the goddess of fortune, and her name is Ranganayaki. So Parashar Bhatta would regularly go and visit Ranganayaki's temple, but never went to Ranganath's temple. So Ranganath had a problem. Why is this devotee not coming to my temple? Every time he is going there only. So Ranganath made a plan to get Parashar Bhatta to his temple, to visit him. So what he did was, he started thinking, why Parashar Bhatta is not coming to my temple? Something is different in me and different in Ranganayaki, because of which Parashar Bhatta goes there. So on the day, there's a day in the year known as Vaikuntha Ekadasi. One day before Vaikuntha Ekadasi, Ranganath is dressed as Mohini. He takes the Mohini avatar. So Ranganath thought that day, I think the reason Parashar Bhatta doesn't come to my temple and only goes to Ranganayaki's temple is because of the way she is dressed and the kind of ornaments and jewels she wears and the way she plaits her hair. So Ranganath decided, I will be a copy of Ranganayaki today. And he dressed himself exactly like Ranganayaki. Exactly like Tayar. Exact. Same dress, same ornaments, same hairstyle, everything same. So he thought,
I will fool Parashar Bhatta and he has to take darshan of me. So then Ranganath told the pujari, call Parashar Bhatta to have darshan of me. So Parashar Bhatta came to have darshan of Ranganath. He stood there in front of the Lord to have darshan of Ranganath. He stood for a few minutes and he had a very sly smile on his face. And he went away without, you know, offering any prayers, without saying anything. He just walked away with a sly smile. The Ranganath said, hey, wait a minute. Why are you going like that? And why do you smile like that? Parashar Bhatta tells the Lord, you think you can fool me? He tells the Lord, you think you can fool me? You may have dressed exactly like Ranganayaki. You may have dressed exactly like the goddess. But there is something missing in you that you can never have. So Ranganath said, what is missing? I did everything exactly the same. He said, in your eyes, I don't see the same compassion that I see in the mother's eyes. That is missing. And he walked away. So, Sharanagati is a step which is bypassing all needs of yours. If you cannot do karma, if you don't have jnana, if you can't do bhakti also, take shelter. But somebody who can't even take shelter, what to do? The one thing that you can do is go and stand in front of the goddess. Somebody who doesn't even know to take shelter of the Lord, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, Radha, Sita, they are there for our rescue. And therefore, there's this very beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita that I want to introduce you all to. This verse actually reveals the secret that Krishna is trying to share with us. And in this particular verse that I'm going to share with you all, this is from the Gita, 5.19. Krishna makes a grammatical mistake just to give us one secret. So in this verse, the fifth chapter, 5.20, sorry, Krishna says, na prahasyat priyam prapya, nodvijet prapya cha priyam, sthira buddhir asamudho, brahma vid brahmani sthita. So here, the word brahmani sthita is a very interesting word that Krishna speaks about. I'll read the translation. It says, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, which is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. In this particular verse, usually the word Brahman refers to masculine and is never addressed as feminine. But in this particular verse, Krishna says, Brahmani Stita. He uses the word Brahmani, not Brahman. Brahman Stita is one. Brahmani Stita. So there's a Sri Vaishnava Acharya, Krishna Abhishek Prabhu, introduced me to this beautiful understanding which this particular Sri Vaishnava Acharya gives about this word Brahmani Stita. And what is Krishna referring to here? Brahmani Sita, situated in transcendence. Krishna is referring to Radha here. The energy, the transcendence that he is speaking about, Brahman would have referred to the Lord, but Brahmani Sita is referring to the energy of the Lord, the Divine Mother. And therefore, here, Krishna is specifically referring to Radha. And the Acharyas explain that Radha is his heart. And therefore, when Kamsa was killing Kamsa was sending demon after demon to Vrindavan, right? But after Krishna shifted from Vrindavan to Mathura, Krishna traveled around the world killing all the demons. Why? Because Krishna knew, if I don't kill all the demons around the world, Kamsa knows where my heart is. My heart is in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan specifically, my heart is in Radha. And therefore, Krishna specifically went around killing all the demons in the world to protect his heart, which is Vrindavan. And specifically in Vrindavan to protect Srimati Radharani. And here, we find that all of us, we are trying to understand the process of Sharanagati. understand the whole mood in which we should take shelter and understand how to take shelter. But if someone doesn't know how to take shelter and doesn't know the process of Sharanagati, but somehow he understands the connection with Radha, with Lakshmi, with the goddess of fortune that the Lord has, that little heartfelt connection that the Lord has, and the devotee takes advantage of that connection, then that is the loophole for us to get anything from the Lord. And I'll end with one super powerful story. And this is a story that will make all of you so happy. And also, it will give you all a very interesting secret. In Kanchipuram, there is a temple of the Lord named Varadaraj. The word Varadaraj means the one who gives Varada, gives blessing. All day long he is standing and giving blessing only. But the one devotee asked Vedanta Desikar, what is the best time to go to Varadaraj to get blessings? Vedanta Desikar gave a very interesting answer. He said, go early morning at 5:30. That is the best time to get as many boons as possible. So this devotee asked Vedanta Desika, why that particular time? Why not any other time? Vedanta Desika explained that there is a very secret thing that happens at that time that only special people know. And if you know that secret, then you know how to get anything from the Lord, basically. So he explains, so all day long the Lord is standing as a king and giving blessings. But at night, he gets tired. And at night, he secretly goes to the altar of Tayar, of the goddess, the divine goddess, whose name is Perundevi Tayar. He goes to the altar of Perundevi Tayar, and he sleeps on her arms. He goes to sleep on her arms. And Perundevi Tayar, she's wearing bangles in her arms, right? So when the Lord sleeps on her arms, the bangles of the goddess are resting on his neck. And by next day morning, when he gets up, there are 3 marks of bangles on his neck. And when the Lord, wakes up in the morning and he goes to the altar to stand on the altar, he's feeling very shy and odd because everybody can see those 3 marks of bangle. You know? It's very embarrassing for the Lord. So at that time, if you go there and you stand over there in front of the Lord and ask for any boon, he will give it to you and say, please, I'll give you any boon you want, but don't go and tell anyone what you saw. That's the secret. So if you really want to get the blessings of the Lord, go at that time, because he has just woken up with a lot of sweet memories and the sweet connection with the divine goddess. And that sweet connection with the divine goddess is what makes the Lord even more sweeter, softer, and more malleable to give blessings to all of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.